This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. For more than 20 years, helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. And if you get a chance to rate our podcast on your provider, we'd appreciate you taking the time to do that. Now, today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the March 7th edition of InvestTalk. It's 2017, and we're all about above-average investing for the average investor. And we try to answer your questions live during this hour, 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. Or you can leave your question on our 24-hour listen line. It's the same number, 888-99-CHART. So we're going to do that in just a minute. We'll go to the lines. Today, bonds and stocks are sending mixed signals, making sense of the conflicting signals about U.S. economy. That's one of our talking points today. Of course, we won't be able to explore it all because that's a big topic, but we'll try to give you some highlights. Our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference is coming up on the 25th of March in San Jose. And we do these, what, twice a year now? One of the things we'll be talking about is developing a plan and executing it. How to develop a plan, how to execute it, give you some step-by-step suggestions. It can be done. And one of the elements in the process after you lay out a plan is to build a portfolio, right? And then when you're building a portfolio, you can take two approaches. There's the top-down or bottom-up. I'm sure you've heard of those approaches. Top-down, bottom-up. When you build a portfolio, you can say, okay, how am I going to find the stocks that I'm going to put into this thing? Well, there's two basic ways, top-down, bottom-up. A top-down approach involves understanding economic trends, evaluating the overall market as a whole, and identifying asset classes that look attractive on historic metrics and trends. A bottom-up approach. Bottom-up approach means you'll try to identify great companies that are outstanding investment opportunities while basically ignoring what is going on in the economy. Now, ours at KPP Financial, we kind of use both methods. But we probably lean on the top-down approach. We like to evaluate the market as a whole to see how attractive it is as an investment from a historical perspective, that kind of thing. Then we analyze individual sectors to determine growth and factors and valuation and attractiveness, technical strength and trends in those sectors. And once we identify the best industries in which to invest, we then dig a little deeper into those sectors and find the most attractive companies. Profitability, growth, cash flow, competitive position, balance sheet strength, those things. All sounds complex, doesn't it? Well, it is not simple, but it also is very learnable. Now, we want you to come to the Wealth Conference because we're going to get into some of this. Building a portfolio, how to do it, where do you find the information to do research? You know, how do you build, not just find a stock, but buying a bunch of stocks in the various sectors? How to manage a whole portfolio, not just individual stocks that you call about and I answer a question and say, yeah, it's a good company. I have no idea what you're doing as far as building a portfolio. Is this the only stock you have? That's not building a portfolio. That's not a smart way to invest. Really, the best investment strategy is to combine both approaches, in my opinion. You know, but remember this also, you know, if the whole market's going up, everybody's going up. A rising tide lifts all boats, and a tide that's going out sinks all boats. It's just a matter of what do you do about it. Got to ride the wave. Got to ride the tide. Got to ride it. So what money questions or money matters are on your mind? Don't save it. You want to talk more about building a portfolio or rebuilding a portfolio? We're ready for any money questions you want to talk about. 888-99-CHART. Let's go to the phones and take this question from our 24-hour listener line.
Hey, Steve or Justin. I had a question about how gold is affected by higher interest rates. And if interest rates only have higher to go from here, then does gold only have lower to go? I listen to you guys on
podcasts.
Thank you very much.
No, you're tying two things that don't tie together. Interest rates and gold prices really don't tie together. the U.S. dollar and gold are tied. Inflation and gold are tied. And fear and gold are tied. Those are the three main things that push gold up or down. Not interest rates. Now, you could say a rising interest rate environment will eventually slow down the economy, and then maybe when that happens, gold will go up. But you could also say, well, a rising interest rate environment makes the dollar more attractive for foreign buyers. Therefore, gold would not go up, would go down. So it really doesn't tie to interest rates. Gold is not tied to interest rates. If interest rates go up and gold goes up, or goes down based on one or the other, it's just a happenstance. It just happens to happen. More closely, look at dollar. Look at UUP, which is represents. It's an ETF representing the dollar, and then go look at gold, GLD, and you'll see what I mean by how tied they are. I mean, you'll see gold move up or go in the opposite direction as the dollar. Very consistently. By the way, it's not always true. Not always true. Just generally true. Okay? Making sense of the conflicting signals about the U.S. economy, that's one of our main talking points today. Also, we're going to discuss what will rising mortgage rates do to the housing market. There's been some studies about that. You know, there's studies about everything, but I'm going to share some information with you. And remember I've talked about this quite a few times about the malls and how the struggle for the big box stores. Struggling shopping malls let high schools and doctors move into where JCPenney's used to be. Remember I said that they're going to have to change, the malls are going to have to change? And no one really knows what direction or how it's going to change. And there may be multiple changes, but we're going to touch on that, base that a little bit. And who is the richest man in the world? Now, Forbes has a list. Do you know who the top richest men? None of them on Forbes' list are the richest man in the world. Isn't that interesting? So I'm going to share it with you. Who is the richest man in the world? Because Forbes leaves out certain categories of people. 888-99 chart. The market was down again today, down 31 points on the Dow, 16 points on the NASDAQ, 7 points on the S&P. And, you know, people are kind of whining. I see articles about, oh, the market is weakening. And you know what? It's down less than 1% so far. And it's already people writing about it like it's a big disaster. The market does not go up and doesn't go in one direction. It doesn't go up and up and up and up and up forever in one direction. It's going to give back some of that. Then it's going to back and fill, then rise and go down. And then there will be a recession someday and the market will collapse again. I mean, it's dynamic. It's not just one direction. And why everybody's getting all up concerned about less than 1% fall, it drives me crazy. You shouldn't even think about it. We need 5, 10, 15% correction. When I say we need it, that would just set up for the next bull run for the market. It would be health restoring to the market. I don't know if we're going to get it, but it would be very healthy. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Any money questions is welcome, especially beginner questions. So 888-99-CHART is our listener line number. You can call it every day from 4 to 5 Pacific time. We're live.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Meredith from Charlotte, North Carolina. I love the podcast. I've listened for a couple of years. Really appreciate the knowledge you impart. I've been slowly adding stocks to my portfolio, mostly value stocks, but I'm light on the financial sector. I work for a credit union. I strongly support credit unions over banks. That said, investing is to make money. So what do you think of Jack Henry? J-K-H-Y. I realize that they're actually in the IT sector, but their success is driven by the financial sector since they provide the underlying technology to support hundreds of credit unions, community banks in their transactions and account opening. They pay a small dividend. Their PE is somewhat high. They seem to be high growth. They've had a big run-up since the election, like most stocks driven by the financial sector. Anyway, please tell me what you think. I'm thinking about buying it. Thank you. I appreciate y'all.
Okay, Jack Henry & Associates, JKHY, develops integrated data processing platforms that manage transactions for more than 10,500 financial institutions. So they are in IT, and yes, you're right, they're tied to the banking sector. It's a $7.3 billion company, so it's pretty good size for a company that I really didn't know much about. I don't remember hearing about it. They never come up my list. I don't know why. They're going to make $3.13 this year after making $3.12 per share last year. Then they're going to make $3.37 next year, up 8%. And that kind of matches their sales growth, 5 to 10% per quarter, more like 7 or 8 on average. So it's a decent grower, 7 to 8%, both earnings and sales. They have this. You're right, the stock has run up very, very nicely since it bottomed in November, and that bottom was a double, triple bottom, and that was around $78, $79. Now it's $94. I would wait. It's a very solid company, good return on equity. It's in a sector that probably is going to do well. I don't see, you know, I changed my mind on banking when Trump won versus Hillary, because Trump has been promising an easing of all the regulations, and the banks have been suffering over those. So I'm thinking if that happens, that will be very beneficial to the banks, and the banks have taken off since. I would wait for a pullback, though, here. I really would, because it's just, you know, done too much. At least let it pull back at least 5, 6%, maybe in the $90 area. It looks like there's good support right in there. And that's where I would, because it's really spiked up in the last month. Let it go back down. Let it give some of that back. The last couple, 3 days is starting to weaken a little bit. Try not to chase performance. That's a bad thing to do. It's got good numbers, healthy company. I think it's a good one to have on your watch list, but I don't know if I'd buy it right here. And the symbol again was JKHY, Jack Henry & Associates, everybody. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So how do you make sense of conflicting signals coming from stocks and bonds? Okay, because they're sending us different signals that doesn't seem to match historical kind of trends. Bond and stock markets are sending conflicting signals about the outlook for the U.S. economy. Treasury yields, yields on Treasury bonds, move inversely to prices, as you know, declined to their lowest level in more than 5 weeks on Friday. U.S. stocks remain just below their record. Usually these two things don't go in the same direction. And the volatility index is very, very low. No one's really worried. It just is odd that you're not getting the normal signals. But our market's been pretty off for some time, ever since the Fed lowered interest rates near to zero. It's made very conflicting statistics coming out, and it's very hard to read these days. This is InvestTalk, everybody. I'm Steve Peasley. Before the hour is up, I want to answer your money questions. Maybe it's a basic question about how the bond market works. Bond funds versus individual bonds. What's the difference? 888-99-CHART. We're live. Listener line number is always open, 4 to 5 Pacific time.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the show. My name is Ben in Mississippi. I've got a question about Facebook. I was thinking about letting them go. I currently own shares of Facebook, symbol FB. I just wanted to get you guys' take on it to see if you think I should just keep holding on and then keep riding it up. Or all right, thanks.
Okay, Facebook, everybody knows who they are, obviously. The issue is it's one of those growth stocks that is growing very nicely. And of course, as a growth stock and growing very nicely, it's overpriced. Simple as that. It is overpriced, but it can continue to be overpriced. So what you want to do is you kind of hold on to the stock. You hold on to the stock unless if you want to take profits, you want to take them when it shows weakness. And even in the last 2-3 days, it's really not showing any weakness. It's going to make $6.68 next year. That's 23% more than this year, which is This year was 28% more than last year. And sales growth is over 50% every quarter for the last one, two, three, four, five quarters. Growth in sales, 50% growth in sales quarter over quarter for five quarters in a row. It's hard to argue about that, you know, and say, well, it's expensive. But it's at $137, at $6.68. So that is like a 20 PE, and that is not that unreasonable. So I don't know if I think you should get rid of it. I don't think it's that overpriced. Now, having said that, if you want to take profits, just wait till it breaks down. Maybe break a downward trend, or maybe 10% off its high. Have some kind of rule, put it in, write it down, and say, this is where I would sell it. But just make sure the rule makes sense. You know, that that you can say that, okay, this makes sense. If it breaks down this much, then it probably might be in a downtrend. I don't want to write it down. It's very difficult. But on a fundamental basis, you kind of want to hold on to Facebook. It's showing pretty good numbers, and it's not that overpriced. It just isn't. FB is a symbol, everybody. FB, Frank Boy. I had an email question. And the question was, and this is from Eric. And I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's, you know, quite long. But his basic question is was talking about, should he be investing in indexes? He's 29 years old. And should he have a blend of total market index versus international stock market index? Do I have a recommendation? And what about using the ETFs, SPY and VOO, to represent those two sectors? I have no problem with you having an overall index of the market and an international stock market index. You will have some overlap because the top companies, the top biggest companies in the United States, have exposure overseas already. I mean, I think the S&P 500, I think like 50% of their earnings of the S&P 500 companies come from overseas. So when you say, well, should I have international exposure? I'm thinking, well, if you're buying a major index or an entire stock market index, you're already getting some exposure overseas. If you want more exposure, I might suggest maybe being a little more specific where should you be in that international market. Should you be in emerging markets? Should you be in Asian markets? Should you be, you know, where in the world should you be? And I would probably suggest, instead of international, maybe have a total stock market index and then maybe have an emerging market index, which would be a little bit different. But be mostly in the market, you know, overall market, not in the emerging market, 10-15% of your portfolio emerging markets. Something like that would make more sense to me. But thanks, Eric. I appreciate the question. Thank you very much. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, remember I was talking about malls, and I was talking about big box stores, and we mentioned that JCPenney is closing down 200 stores, and other big chains are following suit. And it's just because of the, you know, online shopping. I mean, it's nothing to do with them. They have not kept up with the times, and the times has changed pretty rapidly, so it's very difficult for them. But what was interesting is what kinds of things that they are putting in. There's a big boxes at the end of these malls that are empty. And this article that I was reading said, well, here's a couple things. And it was one of the big boxes, they turned it into a school. A school. Now, that's interesting. Another one turned it into a medical center with doctor's offices. Not even retail. Nothing to do with retail at all. But I think that might be the thing that they're going to have to do. They're going to have to turn away from retail. That doesn't have to have no retail, but I'm just saying that the big boxes are probably going to get filled up with something. And it could be, you know, remember we mentioned a few weeks ago, they turned one of the big box stores into like a food court, but for kind of high-end restaurants. So I have little mini kiosk-type restaurants in there? Well, kind of taking off the idea of, those food trucks, the gourmet food trucks that come out. Something. And I thought this was a pretty interesting use. We're about halfway, Mark, everybody, on this Tuesday afternoon. Remember to save the date. March 25th is our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference in San Jose. You can register right now at investtalk.com. Let's hear from you. Any money questions, 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast continues next, but a couple of words about KPP Financial first. It's all about growth. For the investor who is looking for optimum growth and is not averse to a higher level of risk, this investment program really steps up. Take a look at Disciplined Equity on investtalk.com. This addition to KPP's Select Investment Program raises expectations. It targets focused growth for maximum returns. This strategy offers consistent exposure to the equity markets by focusing only on high-quality companies. And this will go up with the market, or higher, because it's always invested. But of course, it also has the downside risk as well. It's more aggressive than our normal stock program. Take a look at it. It's right there for you on investtalk.com. Just click on the Investments tab. But now we continue with our podcast. On our next Invest Talk, though you can't expect to match someone who started planning in their 30s, your cause is far from lost. 7 ways to get ready for retirement if you're 50. That's one of our topics next time on Invest Talk. We hope you can join us.
Hey, Steve and Justin, this is Robert in Sacramento. I have a question about buying a semiconductor ETF. I'm looking at the Vanguard one, VGT. They're at a 52-week high right now, but if you look back at their 5-year performance, it's only gone up from 70s up to where it is now at 135. And I just kind of think with where the cars are all going, more technology and our phones and everything else, even though it's high, do you think holding it for, 5-10 years, it should only go up, is what I'm thinking with how we're going more technical in this world. Let me hear what you guys have to think about it, and listen to you on the podcast. Thank you.
If your time frame is 5 and 10 years, and that's 5 to 10 years, and that's how long you plan on holding it, yes, you can buy it right here. This is my problem. Most people say that to me, that, I'm going to hold this forever. And then I got an email today from someone who said, I bought this stock for the dividend. It's gone up a certain amount, 15%, 20% in a short period of time. Now should I get out or should I sell it and take the profits? Well, if you bought it for the dividend, why even thinking about it? Why even looking at it? The dividend's not changed. So the same thing with this. If you're buying it for the long term, 5-10 years, you can buy it almost anywhere and you'll be fine. Will it come down? Yes, it will come down. It's going to come down. But you have to be able to say, I got it for 5-10 years, so I'll just not worry about it. VGT, by the way, is Vanguard Infotech. Exchange Traded Fund seeking the performance corresponding to the Information Technology Index, 2050 Index. So, yeah, it'll go up 5-10 years. Yeah, it'll go up higher. Will it double? I don't know. No one knows exactly how high it will go up, but it will go up higher. Now, it's had a very good run. It's moved from the middle of June, July last year. It bottomed twice at about $103, $104 a share. Twice, once in May and once in July. Bottom in May, moved up, back down in July. Then from July on, pretty much has moved up with some chattering a little bit in around the election, but then moved up sharply. My personal opinion is that, at some point it's going to give back some of these gains. But if your time frame, it's 5 to 10 years, and you can just buy it and put it in a drawer and not worry about it. You can buy it here. You'll be fine. But let's talk about the next recession. Okay. We're going to have one within 2, 3, 4 years, most likely, very highly likely, because that's when they usually come. The last one was 2008, 2009. So, we're due for it. This is going to crash when that happens. But if your time frame is long enough, you don't care. Right? Time for Invest on Personal, everybody, about the day-to-day personal finance choices that can impact your lives. Can you convert a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA? The simple answer is yes. Remember, the major difference between the two is that the money you put into an IRA, a traditional IRA, is tax-deferred until you start withdrawing from that IRA. With a Roth, you put in money after you pay taxes. That's where you put the money in after you pay taxes from a Roth. But you don't have to pay taxes on any of the gains or any of the withdrawals, no taxes whatsoever, at age 59 and a half or later. Now, I'm not talking about all the ins and outs. I'm not giving you all the factors involved, but that's the simple difference. So how do you convert one to the other? If you decide you want to convert, the simplest way is to have the financial institution that currently holds your traditional IRA. Remember, we're talking about conversion from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA. Have the financial institution that you're at open up a Roth IRA and then just transfer them. Okay? Now, remember, as soon as you roll it from a traditional IRA to a Roth IRA, that money you're rolling, you have to pay income tax on. You're going to have to pay income tax on all the money you roll over to the Roth IRA from the traditional IRA. Now, you're also going to take the money out of the traditional IRA and then put it into the Roth and not roll it over, but you have 60 days to do that without tax complications. And I never recommend people do that because you're leaving a paper trail for the IRS to look at, and they're probably going to ask you, did you... Yeah, and you don't want to get involved with explaining to them, this is what I did. You don't need that. When you roll it over, there's no questions. There's no, that's the normal way to do it. Okay? So just consider it. The younger you are, the better the Roth looks to me. That's Invest Talk Personal. Do you have experience with credit unions you'd like to share? Send me a note. Click on Contact Steve, which is an email at investtalk.com.
There is risk with any investment, but how much risk should you be taking? Try our free risk analysis test, answer a handful of questions, and gain some very valuable insight about yourself. It's there whenever you're ready on investtalk.com.
This is Mike calling from Charlotte. Listen to you guys on podcast. Love the show. I'm calling with just a couple quick questions. Can you explain what you mean when you talk about dollar price averaging on the way to enter the market? I heard you use that term a couple times, and I appreciate the explanation. Second question was, when you guys do valuations, are you using a free cash flow model for valuations or a dividend model to figure out what a stock is valued at? Thanks a lot, and enjoy your show.
Okay, answering the second question first, we don't use either one of those valuations. We don't. We have our own model that we've developed, and we use that model to evaluate companies. Okay? By the way, it does use dividends if we're looking at dividend stocks, but it doesn't if we're looking at growth stocks. And it does use interest rates and earnings yields, you know, comparing the two, but can't get into it. Dollar cost averaging. What that means is you take the same amount of money and you invest it in the stock market every 2 weeks, 1 month, 1 week, the same amount of money on a periodic basis. You pick the periodic basis and you pick how much money it, but you do it consistently. Putting money back in. You don't care what the market's doing, going up and down, sideways. And why that is a good way to do it is because no one knows where the top or bottom is. And too many people try to get it at the bottom and sell it at the top, and they usually get it wrong. And dollar cost averaging does away with all that worry. So you put the same amount of money in, let's say, an index at intervals of every 2 weeks or once a month, maybe every pay period. Okay, or however you want to do it, same amount of money, $1,000 or $500, buying, let's say, the SPY, which is the S&P 500, and you buy the same $500 in 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks later, another $500, and the same, another $500, another $500, and therefore you're getting all your cash invested instead of sitting on the sidelines. But maybe the market will go down during that period. Well, that's great because you buy more shares. Maybe the market's going up. Oh, that's great because you made profit on the first $500 you bought. You see how that does that? Works great if you're in long-term investor, and that's what you should do. Okay? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Will rising mortgage rates hurt the housing market? We know that they've gone up from their ultra-low 30-year fix, 30.5, to now they're like 4.25, 4%, 4.25. And, it's probably going to rise because the Fed's probably going to raise the rates and it will affect the mortgage rates. But will that hurt the housing market? And I'm going to tell you, I don't think it's going to do much to hurt the housing market because I don't think they're going to raise the rates very much. And there was a study done about this. Back in November, between November and January, just recent November, January, housing market went up. And mortgage rates also went up 60 basis points, 0.6%. 60 basis points. And there was no problem. Raising interest rates will affect the housing market, but it's usually a lag. And it usually has to be 100 basis points or more before it to really show up. And studies going back many, many years show that 100 basis points move in a mortgage rate will cause the housing prices to go down 3 or 4%. So there will be an impact at some point. There will be. But right now, currently, we have a shortage of houses. And we have a very strong housing demand going on right now. And most experts think the high mortgage rate, 30-year fixed mortgage rate for 2017 is like 4.5%. Probably won't affect housing much. Probably won't. Yeah, maybe prices in our area will slow down. Maybe prices in the Bay Area, where a lot of the listeners are, will slow down. But it's been red hot up in the Bay Area, and our area has just been, lukewarm. So I just don't think overall it's going to hurt the housing market that much. And I don't think it's something to worry about. It will hurt certain areas more than others, but I just don't think the Fed, even the Fed raises the rates 2 or 3 times, I still don't think the mortgage rates are going to go up that much. Remember, there's an interest spread there, interest rate spread. And I don't, even though the lower rate's going up from the Fed, it doesn't necessarily mean banks have to increase their mortgage rates. They will, but very slowly. They don't want to hurt the business, but they will raise them. Actually, I think that would be good for banks because they're going to be able to stay ahead of inflation. That's what I think. Let's get back to our 24-hour listen line, everybody. Pick up one of those questions, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Stephen Justin. This is Eric calling from Utah. I'm looking at Greenhill and Company, Inc., GHL. It's in the investment making and services sector, small cap. Looking at it ahead of what I believe will be a raise in the interest rate by the Federal Reserve this month. Anyway, wanted to see what you thought about it, if this is a good place to get in or not a good company to look at right now. All right, appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay, Greenhill Company, it is a $859 million company, so it's small cap, small. Provides advisory services on mergers, acquisitions, finance restructuring, and capital raising. Okay, and rising interest rates will be a problem, be a headwind for them. Doesn't mean they won't grow, won't go up. Just means it's going to be a headwind. They pay a pretty decent dividend, 6.1%. Not sure why they're paying that much. Usually small caps do not pay those kind of dividends. It's a $29 stock. So if it's going to pay a dividend on $29, what is that, $1.60, $1.55, $1.60, and they earned $1.77, they're going to earn $1.77 next year, so they're paying all their money, almost all their earnings out in the dividend. That's kind of tough. That's too high of a payout ratio. Remember, we like a payout ratio about 60% of earnings or less, and this is much higher than that. So I don't find that sustainable, everybody. The stock price is not that bad. It's going to make $1.77. It's a $29 stock. Well, that means it's, what, an 18 PE, 17 PE, growing its sales most recent quarters over 25% for 3 quarters in a row. That's pretty good. pretty good. Return on equity is 22%. That's pretty good. Mansion owns 4%. I mean, it doesn't look bad, but again, interest rates, rising rates is a headwind for them. And I'd have to get into a much more detail into the company to find out if I think they will work. But just remember that any company that you're considering that uses debt or has debt, has to refinance debt, is going to have a headwind called rising interest rates. Because we've had very low interest rates for some time. Now, we're not, the rates are, the Fed has promised to raise them. And if they do, which they probably will, that will make it more difficult for those companies with debt or uses debt to make money. It's just going to make it more difficult for them. It's a headwind, as I said, a headwind. Doesn't mean it's not going to work. Doesn't mean the company shouldn't buy them. It just means that's one more consideration. You've got to give it a little bit more weight now. Now, this company has done pretty well recently. You might want to wait for a pullback, you know, just so you can try to get it at a better price. It's not high on my list. If you're going to ask me, would I buy it? No, I don't think I would. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So who do you think the richest man in the world is? Many people think it's the people on the Forbes 100 list. And the number one man on that list is Bill Gates at $86 billion. Number two is Warren Buffett at $76 billion. Number three is Bezos at $63 billion. And Zen Zuckerman at $50 billion. None of those guys are the richest men in the world. They're just on the Forbes top 100 richest men in the world list. Why? Because Ford ignores world leaders, dictators' families that make money using power and politics. The richest man in the world, most people think, is Vladimir Putin. No one knows exactly how much he's worth, but they think it's over $200 billion. Some people think it's worth over $200 billion. Some people think he's only worth between $40 and $100 billion. $200 billion. So apparently, being a dictator or a politician is a good job to have if you want to make a living. So Vladimir Putin. You have to ask yourself, well, what business does he ever run or ever made or ever none? He's a politician. He was in the Secret Service and then he became, you know, the head of Russia. How he makes his money. Interesting. You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. Our last segment of the hour is coming up, but we can still fit you in if you have a question you want to ask. 888-99-CHART. 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. Let's talk to Dominic in Sunnyvale. How are you doing, Dominic?
I'm doing well. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
A two-part question. What do you think about getting into utilities right around now? And what about a specific utility that's got alternative energies or alternative forms of revenue like Southern Company?
Okay. Utilities, generally speaking, you know, the market itself, different sectors work differently in the economic cycle at the peaks and valleys. Different sectors of the market, stock market, work better or worse depending where we are in the economic cycle. And at the peak of economic cycles, utilities usually work better than many of the other sectors. Non-cyclical companies work better, and a utility is non-cyclical at economic peaks. Now, the question you have to ask, are we at an economic peak? That's the hard part, is knowing where you are in the economic cycle, Dominic. But let's just say we're certainly not at the bottom. We're maybe not even the middle part of the rising economic cycle. We're probably closer to the peak than we are the middle. So utilities might start to look attractive. Why do they look attractive? Because everybody still uses electricity, no matter where we are in, you know, where the economy is doing. Whether it's going to recession or not, doesn't matter. Still use electricity. They still pay their dividends. And that's Southern Company. SO is the symbol. Holding company engaged in generating, transmission, and distribution of electricity in Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi. It's going to make 298 this year, then 312 next year. It's a very slow grower. It's picked up its sales in recent quarters, which is surprising, but it pays a 4.4% dividend, and basically that's what you really want to buy it for. You only want to buy it for the dividend and for its steadiness in its business. And you can't argue that Southern's very, very steady. So from that point of view, I kind of like it. Okay?
Thank you.
Thanks, Dominic.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. Let's go to Chase in New York. How you doing, Chase?
Hey, Steve. Thanks for taking my call, as always. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, I wanted to ask you about UMC, United Microelectronics Corp.
Okay.
I was looking at it, and I know you don't really recommend like penny stocks, or whatever. I know it's trading at $2, but it's a pretty big market cap. They announced some new orders, supposed to be shipping 2018 with Panasonic, and it seems like they have a pretty healthy balance sheet. I just wonder what you thought about it.
Yeah, I would not consider this, Chase, a penny stock, even though it's very low price at $2.01.
Okay.
This is United Microelectronic. It's an ADR, so it's a Taiwanese company traded on our exchange. Right. It's a $4.9 billion company, so it's a mid-cap company, so it's not small. Penny stocks not only are cheap in price, but very, very low market cap as well. So it means that it's just, you know, and generally they don't make money. Most penny stocks don't make money and never going to make money. This company makes money, has made money every year, going all the way back to 2010, which is all as far as my data goes back right now. It's going to make 12 cents this year a share, 17 cents next year. So it's a $2 stock making 17 cents. That means it's going to be about, what, a 13 PE or so? So from that point of view, it's not expensive. It's not. It has a bit of debt, 21%, but that's not that bad. I don't like the return on equity, which is only 4%. It's very low for this kind of company, which should be higher. I'm not sure what the profit margins are. I'd like to see that. But it's selling well below book value, which is kind of unusual. That means it's cheap. It's inexpensive. Mm-hmm. When I say cheap, I mean inexpensive to value. Okay, not that. So,
Go
ahead.
I was gonna say they got some like new orders for like this like 40nm ReRAM memory that they got to deal with Panasonic. Like I said, they're supposed to be shipping 2018. I don't know how much that would give them a boost, but it seems like it's kind of flying under the radar right now. I don't know.
It might be. It is a bit speculative because it's a low price stock and they could get very volatile, as you probably have seen. I mean, it moved up.
Right.
You know, it went up 6 cents a day, and that's 2.5%. I mean, only 6 cents this week.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so it's pretty volatile. Yeah. Now, I think
it's
a good one to take
a bid on it, though.
I do think it's a good one to roll a dice on.
Spread.
Chase, I do. Okay. Good luck with it. Our time is up for the hour. Thanks. If you'd like to contact me directly with a personal message, just click on Contact Steve on investtalk.com. That's an email that comes directly to me. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. On behalf of Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thanks for being with me today. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.